You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Elizabeth Hyatt. She's talking to me about her exhibit at Daniel Cooney, Metamorphosis. Elizabeth, thanks so much for being with me today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Elizabeth, the exhibit is called Metamorphosis at Daniel Cooney right now. And of course, there's links here so listeners can find out more. But can you tell me a little bit about the title? That seems so telling, and I'm so excited to get into just how you are kind of creating these works, these prints, these cyanotypes and silver gelatin prints. Can you tell me about that title, Metamorphosis, and how that relates to the show?
Sure, sure. Well, you know, I do a kind of what I call sort of, you know, I don't know, experimental portrait photography. What I'm interested in is basically if it's possible to photograph something about the inner lives of human beings. You know, I find it kind of extraordinary that we, you know, we all present a certain facade to the world, but we actually have complex inner lives that we sometimes access through dreams, but most people don't know about us as individuals. You know, what I wanted to do with this project is find some way to explore what goes on inside us, what our subconscious worlds are like. And that's, you know, it's hard to photograph. And it's hard to photograph it honestly. So I decided to experiment with the idea of having people be hypnotized in my studio. I worked with a hypnotherapist, a trained hypnotherapist, and he took an hour and a half per session with each person. And before he started, he decided he asked people to decide something they wanted to explore. Some people wanted to explore something about their childhoods. Some people wanted to see what it would be like to live as an animal or a bird, or, you know, people came up with extraordinary things, actually. One woman wanted to remember walking through the forest as a child. And so he would hypnotize them, and then he would they would go into trances in front of my camera. They would act out this transformation. And let me just say, it only worked about a quarter of the time. I photographed many, many, many more people than actually showed me anything about their inner life. You know, it was sort of, you could tell right away if it wasn't genuine, if it was fake. But when it was real, it was quite extraordinary. And so I used an 8x10 camera, and I watched them, and I photographed what I saw on the outside, which often had very little to do with what they was going on with them inside. It's what it looked to me as an observer. So that's pretty much what I did.
And these were, of course, nudes. Everyone was unclothed that you did these, that were hypnotized and that you did these portraits of with the 8x10 camera.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting. Of course, everybody knew ahead of time that I wanted them to be nude, and I wanted it to be without clothes because it was strange enough. You know, I wanted it to be down to the bare bones, to be primal and essential. I didn't want to see people, you know, in their fab outfits doing strange movements. I mean, you know, I really wanted to get to the essence of the person. And so what we did was we hypnotized people dressed. But afterwards, after the hour and a half session, the hypnotherapist would snap his fingers. People would wake up, and they'd take their clothes off. They'd walk in front of the camera, and when it worked, I mean, he snapped his fingers again, and people went into their transformation. It was kind of extraordinary, and you know, let me just emphasize again, it often did not work. And there was a lot of sort of acting out, and, you know, you could tell right away when it wasn't genuine. But when it was amazing.
And so what you're photographing then, and you know, I mean, and that's amazing with the 8x10 camera as well, which is just a huge camera, of, you know, in using film, what you're photographing is a trance state. state. These are bodies. These are people in a kind of altered state, so to speak. Right.
Exactly. And you know, because with the 8x10 camera, which is on, you know, it's a big camera, it's on a heavy tripod. You can't actually, once you put a film holder in, you can't actually see through the lens. So what I did was, you know, people moved around, and I of course didn't speak to anybody or direct them. I was a witness. But I put tape on the floor at the edge of my frame on each side to make sure, you know, so if people wandered out of the frame, I knew I wasn't going to be able to take a picture, and I just had to hope that they would wander back in front of the camera, which they often did. And I mean, they almost always did. But you know, it was a very interesting process because I was completely an outsider. I mean, I was not the director. I was not, you know, I was a witness, and you know, it was actually quite moving often.
And did the people often have, I mean, that was a kind of a transformative, therapeutic almost experience for the models as well, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting that you said that because, you know, I just, my show is up and I had an opening, and of course I invited some of the models, and I hadn't seen them for a while, and many of them were talking about how it was a profound experience for them. In a way that, you know, When they first woke up from the trance, I gave people something to drink and said, "How are you feeling?" Everybody was very cheerful, but we didn't talk about the experience. But at the opening, people did talk to me, and interestingly, talked to some of the other people who were at the opening about the experience and how it stayed with them. And I've had several people write me fairly extensive notes about the experience. One woman went so far as to tell me that it actually was a turning point in her life. You know, she got out of a bad relationship and she moved forward in a different direction. And, you know, I was thrilled. You know, it wasn't my motive. My motive was purely, you know, selfish to make a record of an extraordinary experience and see if I could. But I was very happy that many of them enjoyed it.
And yeah, that's fascinating. Yeah. That's just a fascinating process. And these, of course, are all cyanotype. The ones that we're talking about, the prints in the end were cyanotype prints.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I shot the project with 8x10 color film. You know, which is extremely sharp and very realistic. And I could see that there was so much going on that was fascinating. But it was so realistic. You know, you could see every tattoo, every pore, everything that made somebody into a kind of modern human being. So I put the project aside for a number of years. I tried something, but it really, I haven't done it. And then during the pandemic, when I had way too much time on my hands, I was, you know, just sort of thinking vaguely about different things that I'd worked on. And I suddenly thought, wow, wouldn't it be wonderful if I could use a process that was very nonspecific and very, very emotional in and of itself, as an environment for what was going on. And I wanted it, usually cyanotypes often anyway, they're very sort of sentimental, they're kind of pale and streaky. But what I wanted was this really, really, you know, rich kind of Yves Klein blue, very plain, and yet with the sort of layers that come from painting on an emulsion. And so I approached a master printer, Chuck Kelton, who I've worked with many times, and said, you know, what do you think? And he said, you know, who knows? And, you know, for quite a long time, about a year and a half, we worked on trying to get the prints right. And we finally figured out how to do it.
Right, because that field of blue, I mean, you talk about Yves Klein, but that they're really in this in this incredible field of blue, right? That kind of
right.
solid blue in the background is what I would imagine quite difficult to print, as well as the range of tones.
Well, the thing is, you know, you have to paint the emulsion onto paper. You'd paint it onto watercolor paper. And, you know, that just creates a whole host of problems. And it doesn't usually matter with cyanotype because people want this kind of, you know, they want the emotion to come from the streaks and the, you know, the different, the lights and darks. But I didn't want to create a fake storm of emotion. I wanted something that would just be there, in the layers would come from the fact that it is hand painted. You know, painting isn't the right word, but you know, it's applied by hand, and you almost can't, you know, things that are the hand is so important, and you don't see that very much in prints today because you know it's much more of a mechanical process.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's right. I love talking about these prints in this process, your camera and the cyanotypes, because you don't see much of that as well, large format or prints like this. So there's another series in here, gelatin silver prints.
Right. It's part of the same metamorphosis project. And it is printed gelatin silver and shot in black and white. What I decided to do was to try to explore another completely different aspect of inner emotion. And so I started to work with people who allowed themselves to be bound, mostly in bandages, but to be bound and made immobile. And a lot of the time, this sort of practice it's a sexual practice. And I wasn't so much interested in that. What I was interested in is, what the person who was being wrapped was experiencing inside, you know, and what particularly fascinated
me. Before you tell me about that, because there's images here too, but when you say wrapped, tell me a little bit about what that means, because this isn't, there may be, right, like a bondage issue, but you're talking about a full wrap and almost mummification type of wrap.
It's actually called mummification. When I was shooting the hypnosis project, someone who I photographed said, you know, oh, well, you know, if you like this, you'll probably be interested in mummification. I had never heard of it. And someone who practices it takes, usually it's vet wrap, but it can be plastic, it can be a lot of different things, and binds the person, wraps them almost like a mummy, so they can't move without the help of the person who's doing the wrapping. So the first thing that really interested me was this relationship, you know, that somebody can't make this creation on somebody unless the person they are wrapping trust them completely. I mean, literally trust them with their life, because, you know, you can
because
fall
you're
over.
Becoming immobile, they're immobilized.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't get out of it yourself. So this relationship, which right there fascinated me so much. But what also fascinated me was that I was told that often people who are bound like that go to a very deep place inside themselves called subspace. And what intrigued me was that you couldn't see it. So it's completely left to the viewer's imagination. Unlike the people who are hypnotized, where, you know, they're naked in every sense of the word. You see everything. You're also imagining what they're going through, but it's just a very different, it's a very different way to access the state. So I combined them in a project, basically.
Well, and in some of these bound figures in this work, there's several different setups, but unlike the previous work we were talking about with the hypnotist, the cyanotypes, there's often two figures here, right? That are
yeah.
or sometimes that are interacting or more. So how is that set up? Because now there's the inner life of one person that we can't quite see or have to intuit or understand from the imagery, but there's also a type of communication going on, it seems.
Yeah, no, it's so interesting. I mean, one of my favorite pictures is it's two men who have been completely mummified in white vet wrap, and the practitioner put them facing each other, and there must be like 2 inches between them. So there's the feeling of intimacy, but of course they can't speak to each other and they can't touch each other. And so that black space between them becomes really important, and it's almost feels charged to me when I was taking the picture, you know, that's what I focused on, the space between them. And it's, you know, I have no idea what they actually were experiencing. I was just experiencing, I was using my imagination as a viewer and thinking, what must it be like to be completely unable to reach out to the person so close to you?
Yeah, that's so fascinating, and almost the opposite of the cyanotypes, right? These kind of
exactly.
Explorations. You said there was a practitioner there, so there's a person in the studio that's also doing the, do you call it binding?
I call it binding, wrapping. You know, I'm not certain if there is a technical term. Mummifying. Yeah, no, this is definitely, it's a practice. You know, it's the skill involved in doing this is really kind of amazing. I mean, one of the other things that I loved about it was that it was just so beautiful. I mean, you know, this wasn't sort of somebody just, you know, taking some gaffer's tape and winding it around somebody. It's beautifully done. It creates sculpture. And so the people, you know, there are these real master practitioners who do this. And they often do it with somebody who they're in a relationship with, but sometimes it's just, you know, people who want to be part of it, you know, but they want to have the experience, which is, you know, it's a very intense experience.
Well, part of your work, it seems, I mean, you know, we're talking about images, but the process itself seems not just performative in some ways and almost theatrical, but it's also transformative processes, right? For the viewer, you're setting up a tableau, a scene, a figure, you're using practitioners to help this and facilitate this. However, it seems like it's something in between a performance, which in some ways, obviously, the cyanotypes aren't really quite a performance, right? Because it's not a conscious experience. The mummification ones, perhaps a little more, but nevertheless, whatever that in between world is it modeling, is it a performance, it's somehow in between, right? Because there's a bit of directing, there's something theatrical here, there's something performative that's part of this process. Is that correct?
It's true, you know, it's true, but you know, I am not the director. I'm if anything, I was more outside with the bound pictures than I was with the hypnosis, because, you know, I had absolutely nothing to do with it. It was in fact, it was quite a lonely, difficult period when I did that project, because it was a world that I wasn't part of, and it was relationships that I had no experience with, and also no say in. I watched what happened, and I chose to frame it. I chose what I wanted to photograph, but it's not like I said, oh, put these two people together, or, you know, it was completely up to the person who was doing the binding. And what happened in front of the camera happened. You know, I mean, it's funny, but, you know, for me, the only way I can do this honestly is to do it as an outsider. Once you start interfering, it's not about the experience people are having, it's the experience you want to create as the artist. And, you know, it just seems like fakery to me to do that. And, I mean, I'll give you an example. One of the pictures in the project is a woman who, there are people who have balloon fetishes, and they go into these very large balloons. And I got interested in that because of the mummification. And so I was put in touch with somebody who was willing to create that for me. And she brought a 6-foot balloon into the studio. I mean, she had it blown up in the studio. And then there was a woman who went inside the balloon. And I didn't tell her what to do. And she mostly, it was really quite fascinating because, of course, she was in her own world, this kind of shimmering, beautiful world. She could see us, we could see her, but we couldn't touch her. We couldn't access her in any way. And she was just, you know, mostly she just sort of looked at me. And I took some pictures, but after about 10 minutes, the woman who was handling her said, we're going to have to get her out. She's going to lose air. And just as she said that, the woman inside the balloon sort of folded down to the bottom of the balloon. She was losing air. And the practitioner said, you know, we have to burst the balloon. And I, of course, you know, with an icicle in my heart, said, wait a second, and, you know, pulled out the dark slide, got it exposed a sheet of film, and that, you know, and then, of course, we burst the balloon and she came out. But I didn't expect it or direct it, and it was such a moving moment. I mean, it was just beautiful. She sort of pooled at the bottom of this womb-like orb. And, you know, it's almost like she's in an egg or something. It's such a beautiful image, but it happened.
Right, right. Yeah, that's such a wonderful story. So one more question about this, the production of this series. You know, there's the individuals that you're photographing that are in your studio that, as you said during the opening, they're talking about transformative experiences that they're having, very personal experiences that in a way are apart from what you're doing, but also, of course, you know, created by that. Did you also have personal experiences like that, or do you have one you'd want to share that was particularly transformative to you the way the models were talking about it?
You know, in some ways, the entire project was like that. I was seeing things that I'd never seen before. And often, especially while I was photographing the people who were being wrapped, I had, you know, it was very intense for me. I felt a profound loneliness a lot of the time, because there was this world that was happening, and I had, you know, a wall could have been up. I mean, I was so far removed from it. And, you know, it was much more intense than a number of the projects that I've photographed before. And I did have myself hypnotized, not, you know, I didn't go in front of the camera, but I wanted to see what my subjects were experiencing. So I had the hypnotherapist just hypnotize me in the studio for an hour and a half, you know, and I didn't choose a transformation. I just wanted the experience. And while we were, while he was photographing me for, you know, there was this series of helicopters outside my studio window making a terrible racket. It was like Apocalypse Now. And it was horrible. And I kept thinking, you know, I'm not having this experience, like, it's so incredibly horrible and noisy out there. So when the hypnotherapist finally woke me up. I said, you know, I'm so sorry about the helicopters. And he said, what helicopters? And there was no noise. I mean, we were in complete silence. So, you know, make of that what you will. I have no idea what it means. But
yeah, that's fascinating. But it's an interior experience, like so much of what some of the models have talked about. It's very much an interior experience.
Yeah.
Just fascinating. So I thanks so much for talking with me in this show. I want to ask you one more question off topic, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Well, I'm it's funny that I'm reading two nonfiction books about making portraits. One is called Facing the Modern, and it's about portraits in Vienna from, you know, 1900 on, you know, Egon Schiele and all those. I find that work just endlessly fascinating, and this is a really wonderful book all about how, you know, the layers of what was happening in society, both with art and with politics, and how it was infusing how people were willing to portray even their patrons, you know. And I'm really enjoying that. And I also, so at the same time, I got a book called The Self-Portrait, which was a show actually at the Neue Gallery, but it's just fascinating. I mean, it's from the same period. I'm just going through a sort of Vienna secession obsession. So that's what I've been immersed in over the past couple of weeks.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for talking with me today. I wish you well with this show, and hopefully listeners can also see the show before it's down. Elizabeth, thank you so much for your
time. Well, thank you for having me. This was really, really fun.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.